Hello, testing. Are we gassed up, ready to go?
We are gassed up in more ways than one.
You may be. I'm not. I'm good to go.
I'm getting out of here.
It's time for another episode of Who's Driving? Welcome to Who's Driving? I'm Wesley Turner.
And I'm Stephen Merck. We're two best friends and entrepreneurs.
Who's Driving is an entertaining look into the behind the scenes of our lives, friendship, and business.
These are the stories we share and topics we discuss as two best friends would on a long road trip.
Along the way, we'll check in with friends and offer a wide range of informative topics centered around running small businesses, social media, and all things home and garden.
Buckle up and enjoy the ride. You never know who's driving or where we're headed.
All we know is it's always a fun ride. And on this week's episode, we have my hubby, Dan the Farmer, Pedal Pickers himself, Daniel joining us.
Dan the Dahlia Man.
Dan yeah. the Dahlia Man.
That's what someone called me one time.
Farmer Dan. That's yep. what I was trying to say.
Farmer Dan.
I'm here.
The king of petal pickers is here. That's our flower farm. If you don't know, if maybe you're just joining us, we live on a flower farm. Daniel and I do, not Stephen. And we ship flowers all across the country. And we have Daniel joining us this week. We're going to talk about your European trip that you just got back from, seeing all the gorgeous flowers.
Yes, and our peonies that we're selling for Mother's Day, and what you can plant in your own garden right now to be blooming this summer.
Exactly. So let's get into it. So first of all, I mean, we are cutting it close. Mother's Day bouquets are shipping. They'll ship, I guess, a week from this Thursday.
Yep. Wednesday. They'll arrive to everyone next Thursday. So for our Mother's Day bouquets, this is like the holy grail of our spring bouquets, because we hoard all of our peonies that have been blooming over the last couple weeks,
which are amazing.
And peonies only bloom for a couple weeks. If you have one in your garden, then you're used to that. But right. what we do is we store them in our coolers as close to freezing as possible. And that basically suspends them so that we can hold them really up to 6 weeks. But fortunately for us, we're only holding them a couple weeks because everyone wants them for Mother's Day.
Right. And they will be, it's one of the flowers we always talk about with harvesting, you know, on the flower farm. Normally you're harvesting and they are sent out right away. But peonies are one of the flowers, fortunately, that you can hold, like you said, for a few weeks, several up to six, and it doesn't affect their
quality
at all.
And don't you, I may be wrong, don't you store them dry?
Yep. We cut them off the plant, store them horizontally in our coolers and crates. We stack up all the crates and there's no water. They're held dry.
Crazy.
It's so cool.
And for a couple weeks, they look normal, just like you had just brought them in there. After a few weeks, though, their leaves do start to wilt. So they look kind of funky. Mm. Just looking at it in the cooler. But the second you recut the end and put it in fresh water, everything rehydrates and it starts to open. And we have a really good reel on our Instagram page from last season that goes through the process of how we store them and how you can do it at home. If you have a peony in your garden, you just have to pick it at the right stage, which I show you how to do.
Right.
And then you can wrap them up and put them in your fridge. And we had a lot of people try that last year and everyone said it was pretty cool. They didn't know they could do that.
Yeah.
You have to cut them like at the marshmallow.
Yes. So right before they open, we call it the marshmallow stage, but the peony bud starts to swell and you want to get it before it opens. But the marshmallow stage is kind of squishy to the touch. And visually, you can tell it looks different.
Right.
Cut it thin, strip off some of the lower leaves, put them in your fridge. And so what a lot of people do, they message me and said, I did this for our graduation party that we had at our house, or we had a wedding at our house like June 1st, and I saved my peonies for May
right
until we were ready to use them for that. And everyone loves it, especially for a party. It only has to last a few days, but we still find after we hold them that they still last like 5 days after, even if they've been in the cooler for a month.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so crazy. That's really cool. You're going to have to repost that reel this week. That's what you're going to do. And then it'll be there and you can see, he shows you step by step, because you can do this at home. There's nothing to it. You just have to know to harvest it at the right stage, wrap it up, put it in your little refrigerator drawer.
That people may not know, but you don't want to put a wet peony into your fridge.
Yeah.
So it has to be dry. And then, like we say, dry store it. So you're not putting it in water before you store it. But if it rains outside or something, you may want to like put a fan on it to kind of dry it off before you put it in the fridge for the storage process.
Well, that's I so think cool. because of that, that just makes peonies one of the best flowers.
Yeah.
So what's neat and something that I found out after starting a flower farm is that we're located in a special part of the country to grow peonies. Mm-hmm. So peonies need a certain amount of chill hours for them to bloom properly each year. Some varieties need more than others. You can look that up per variety.
Right.
But we in the upstate of South Carolina get just enough cold during winter that we can grow most of all the peonies. We can't grow the latest blooming varieties. They just don't seem like we get enough cold period during our winter for them to bloom properly. Mm-hmm. But the early and mid varieties, those work great for us. And then it's not far south from here. Even down in Charleston, which is just a couple hours away from us, they can't really grow peonies because they don't get cold enough at night all winter.
Right.
And so we're in this sweet spot, but peonies are amazing flower for Mother's Day. And we're one of the few places in the United States that we will be able to harvest about 85% of all of our peonies.
Just for
Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Most of the country, and those of you listening, know that your peonies don't bloom until June.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you'll get they'll start blooming at Mother's Day. But for a business in a production farm like we have at Petal Pickers, we need them early enough that we can pack them and process them and ship them and put them together for orders and get them out the door before Mother's Day. And
right.
We're one of the few farms that can do that.
And the fact that it hits Mother's Day is just perfect because you, Mister, have now planted and expanded each year your peony section.
We have 3,000 peony plants in the ground now. Mm-hmm. And we are nowhere near full production.
And I remember when you planted your first peonies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that wasn't that long ago.
It was like 6.5 years ago.
But I mean, to be at 3,000?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not all 3,000 are in production yet. Like, because
I would say only like 1,100 are in production now. So it's going to, in about 3 years from now, I'll be named Dan the Peony Man.
Yeah. I've got a question. Mm-hmm. What is another common flower that could be dry stored? Because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Poppies, our Italian poppies are something that we dry store even most flower farmers don't know that. That's something
I've never heard that.
I've just tried to teach people, and it's so interesting because we can store them for a couple weeks in our cooler. I literally don't even cut them. I just like snap the stems with my fingers down at the base of the plant and just throw them all in a crate and then take them in the cooler, dry store them, and we ship them out. After that. So it's once you recut the stem and put it in fresh water, it comes back to life.
Poppies are good too. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking from a production.
Right. It's so crazy to think about. You know, some flowers will wilt like so quickly if they're not back in water. And then some you can dry store. Like that's.
There's not a lot.
Yeah.
I think there's more that I know of that you can ship dry,
right?
But to actually hold it in storage at like 33, 34 degrees, there's not that many.
The other one you can do that way, but it's a little bit different, is tulips. You dry store those, but you leave the bulb on them. They have the bulb on, so they're still getting moisture and nutrients from the bulb, but that's still kind of cool.
But that works great because Daniel, you grow those hydroponically, and they're so clean from the store end. They are so clean to deal with, and they're so easy to store because we're not having to put those in water until they're cut.
Right.
So that's kind of a great thing, too.
That is a good one. But back to your peonies and your 3,000 I can't imagine when those are all in production.
I can't either.
But the other little secret behind peonies, everyone should have them if they grow in your area. You can have just a couple of bushes. But what you may not know is for them to be in production, they really have to be in the ground 3 years-ish.
Minimum. Like they say, like 5 years is when you really get into good production with them.
Yeah.
I start at 3. Heck, I started at 2.
Right.
I'm greedy.
So he'll cut a couple of blooms off the second year because you want to let the plant get bigger and you don't want to be, you know, taking all the nutrients and stuff from it so that it can develop its root and that sort of thing. So it takes a few years for them all to get in production. The other thing is, and you know how Daniel is, Stephen, you know how he is. Some of them are very expensive.
I know. He has bought some crazy expense, but it pays off.
It does.
This is a cool fact. Martha Stewart's gardener, Ryan McAllister, follows me on Instagram.
Yes.
And we message back and forth. And today I posted a reel about our pastel against peonies, which we made available to sell to everybody on our fall bulb sale last year on our website, petalpickers.com, because we made a huge investment of putting those in our fields.
Right.
So they retail each root for those plants. And we plant our peonies bare root. Mm-hmm. You plant them in fall and then they grow in spring. Each root we were selling for $165 a piece.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Believe it or not, we sold some.
Right.
And
well, I mean, how many do you have planted in the field?
I have 90.
Do the math. Do the math. Awesome.
So,
what flower is that? What variety?
Pastel Agence.
Yeah.
Or some people call it Pastel Elegance, but it's spelled one word. So, no.
Pastel Agence. Have I seen that one?
No.
I have some downstairs. I'll show them to you.
Yeah.
But Martha Stewart does not even have those planted in her garden.
Right.
And so, but maybe she will now that her gardener saw
that
they have them at Petal Pickers.
Isn't that funny that he follows you and has messaged you? Because that goes back to the 6 degrees of separation we did.
You're one person away from being Martha friends with Martha.
Ooh, okay. So let's go through celebrity people that follow me because I think this is hilarious. And it's most random
group of people. We want to hear.
Yeah, this is. But how funny is that, though? You're one link away from Martha Stewart.
Oh, but look, so Katie Couric follows me.
Yes.
On Instagram. So think of who that's one link away from, like every president, everyone that she's met.
Right.
Uh-huh. Patty Stanger is Millionaire Matchmaker.
We'll take it.
Total opposite of the spectrum.
Uh-huh. Right.
But that was fun to see her. And then I think it's Jonathan Knight is from New Kids on the Block.
Yeah.
So he's one of the singers there that I bet a lot of people will know.
Yeah.
And
how crazy is that? I don't pay attention enough to my feed to see who.
I know. It's so random. I caught all those,
because
they liked something or started following me and it popped up in my notifications. But there may be others. I don't know.
It's pretty exciting.
At one time, I haven't looked in a long time.
Ooh.
1 year.
What's the new one? Christopher Spitzmiller. Am I saying his name wrong?
I don't know. Who's that?
He lives up there somewhere near Martha Stewart, and he has a line of lamps that are hot, super ultra high end, and they have like gardens and stuff in their New York property, upstate New York, and he also has a place in Kentucky.
Yeah.
I'm surprised y'all know him through Home Decor.
I don't know that name.
It's a different style.
You know, we're oblivious to a lot of things. We're just in our own world.
It's probably very cosmopolitan New York kind of. Contemporary.
Like upstate New York, but yeah.
Or is it like shoo gay?
Yeah. More conservative. I'm like your style, kind of.
Okay. Well, we might know.
I have to look him up.
That may not be his name. I may have said it wrong.
That's okay.
One time, one random year, I got like an email from somebody, or maybe you could put your handle into something and it would tell you who your most famous people were. This was probably 5 or 6 years ago. So I don't even know if she still follows me. But one of the girls, I can't remember her name now, but the blonde girl that was on Two Broke Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Her.
Yeah, she followed me.
Oh.
I don't know if she still does or not. I can't even remember her name now. But it's so funny. I wish I could put that in and see who
The only who cool thing that's happened to me is, you remember, we ran into Tom Felicia from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy at Market.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, can I get a picture with you? And he was like, yes. And I posted on my realtor page and I tagged him and I said, oh my God, we're at High Point Market, saw Tom Felicia, and he just had to have this picture with me.
Yeah.
And he liked it.
Yes.
I was like, you know, a lot of people would have hit like blah something. So I was like, okay, he has a good sense of humor.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So yeah. So back to, again, to your peonies, you have some very expensive ones and you'll have to show that. But your Mother's Day bouquet, let's make that clear. You can order it now.
It's on our website at petalpickers.com. We will ship the peony bouquet. It'll leave the farm Wednesday before Mother's Day, arrive to you on the next day, Thursday,
yep,
via FedEx Express. And what's neat about our peonies is we ship them and the flowers still may be, like when it leaves the farm, it's still closed.
Right.
So you're starting it at the very beginning of the process. And by the time it comes to you, it may have started to open already, but it's still going to take a day or two for the peonies to open up. But by Sunday, the bouquet will be full.
Absolutely stunning.
Stunning. And we include 9 peonies in each one. A lot of florist retail peonies at $10 a stem. That's very standard, common, especially during a holiday.
Right.
They can be even more than that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm just calculating like, they can be more than $10 for sure.
Yeah, the value is definitely there. It's a beautiful bouquet. And 9 stems of peonies doesn't sound like a lot, but when they open up, some of our varieties are massive.
Yeah.
Like we get the full double huge peonies and it's stunning. Even when I bring them inside here, I'll bring in like 5 that are left over in the cooler or something.
Yeah.
Their stems may be crooked or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, but they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And 9 is a lot.
So we'll have the peonies and then it will have other flowers in there.
Yeah.
Too.
We include some dianthus and bupleurum and some hydrangeas just to kind of fill
it
out.
And how much are the Mother's Day bouquets?
So they are a little over $100. And then depending on where you live in the country, the shipping's either $10 or $20.
That's a great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great deal.
So it's a very nice
bouquet.
So you can order that at petalpickers.com. And I'll put the link to the website down below in the show notes as well. But it's just petalpickers.com too.
And you're going to have flowers for
you better order them because you've already sold.
Days.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
And perfect for Mother's Day. And if you
can't, we're about halfway sold out and we just listed 3 days ago.
Yeah.
But that's so, I think that's such a good deal compared to what you pay retail for.
Yeah.
They're the most beautiful flowers.
Because if you get the same bouquet at our garden shop, it's going to be more than that. Lot more than that.
Yeah.
Price.
Yeah.
There. So that's exciting. Mother's Day, I was just telling Daniel last night, he was like, oh, I'm like kind of stressed and because there's so many moving parts in the springtime. But I was like, Mother's Day is equivalent to mine and your Christmas holiday.
Yes.
I'm like, you're about to have Christmas because that's the last major spring holiday. And then it kind of normalizes a little bit until you get really into the dahlia season in the fall for weddings.
But it's a big day. Like it's a big week for you.
Oh, yeah.
And well, it's at the store.
Our garden store is the biggest, busiest day of the year, Saturday before Mother's Day.
So we're all geared up for that.
Last time I sliced my finger, Valentine's Day, I slit my finger with shears and watched myself do it. I was like, I'm cutting this. So I wonder, like, am I going to lose a finger this Mother's Day?
Let's hope not. So for those of you, because it's spring, or for those who want to plant something, and it's spring, depending on where you are in the country, because
people have told me it's still snowing at their house, but they have got to be like in Canada.
I don't know.
Somewhere north.
Well, we were just talking about this yesterday because we go on Instagram and I'm like, God, people are posting like old reels and this is way behind, but it isn't.
It's their spring.
It's their spring.
We're so far ahead of them.
Like tulips are just now up north.
And on the farm, things move so fast in spring and in fall for me that like I'm outside sun up to sundown every day, 7 days a week in the spring and fall. Now I get my winter break and even the summer is so hot that I can't be outside that long anyways, but so I take my breaks and we go on vacations and all that. But spring and fall, it's full throttle and it just goes by so fast because I'm seeing the same thing you just said, tulips on Instagram from people growing up north And I'm thinking like, wow, tulips seem, and they were, that was, we haven't had a tulip blooming on the farm in over a month, maybe like 5 to 6, maybe 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was saying, and you were saying, we were talking about it, because I always say it seems odd, but you were talking about, it's almost like when we see it, because tulips were so long ago, it's when we see it now from people up north, it seems out of date.
Yeah.
It's like seeing a poinsettia after Christmas.
Yeah, it's so weird for me. I'm like,
well, it's warm here, though. I mean, we're in the 80s this week. But
see, we take it for granted.
We have sunflowers that are about to bloom on the farm. We have like 100-foot rows of sunflowers about to start blooming. So it's so funny just the difference in your climate. But it's very beneficial to our farm. I pay for it with the humidity and the heat in the summer. But outside of that, I love kind of being first.
Yeah, you're first on all the crops.
On all the crops, except dahlias. That's the only thing. But I have them long enough and enough of them that my season
but it's
is fine.
Funny because yes, up north they can have dahlias earlier, but the funny thing,
I could technically have them earlier. There's just a lot of pest issues with doing that, so I choose not to.
And you wouldn't have them at Mother's Day, all of them.
No, that would be really pushing it. Yeah. You'd almost need to heat a greenhouse.
Yeah.
But for dahlias though, what works out in your favor here, not being the first, is it hits the fall wedding season.
Oh yeah, it's perfect.
So because if they were blooming in July when everyone's like on vacation and stuff, they wouldn't be as valuable as they are in the fall.
Here at Petal Pickers, we're selling to florists locally and across the state, and we're shipping our bouquets to all of our friends nationwide. But a big part of our business is selling to event florists who are using our flowers in weddings. And during the summer, that drops off significantly. Also, our retail sales drop off, just like any retail business across the country.
Right.
People are going on vacation. The kids are out of school. It's a totally different, you know, season.
Right, right.
And so we're busiest in the spring and fall. And we've just kind of learned to like, don't try to push everything just because you can in the summer. Like, you will burn out so quick.
Yeah.
Like, this time of year, like I said, I'm working 7 days a week.
Right.
For months.
Yeah.
You can only do that so long.
Right. And then it gives you, in the summertime, when it does slow down, time, like you said, we can go on vacations or whatever. But you're also not stopping. There's so much to do to prep for the fall and plant and that sort of thing.
We're never stopping.
Yeah.
It's wild.
That's what people, I think, sometimes don't understand. Because I'll still get messages on Instagram like, well, what does the farm do during the winter? And I'm like,
dahlias. Dahlias are a year-round thing.
Yeah.
So
they work.
We're about to start planting our dahlias now. We're still shipping dahlia tubers that we harvested last fall.
Right.
And all winter, we're dividing and processing our dahlia tubers and even starting tulips in January. You know, it just never ends.
Right.
We have employees year round.
And isn't it crazy that this is, what year is this for you now? Because you planted your first, I still have the picture.
2017, I put my first plant in the ground. And of all flowers and plants, it was Dusty Miller. Yeah. Like the most boring.
But you planted other things that day too.
I planted, that was just the first transplant I put in the ground.
Yeah.
And your mom was here and I remember doing that. And I was like freaking out on y'all. Like, that's not going to work. You're not planting it enough. Y'all are just like smashing them in the ground. And they all grew. They were fine.
Yeah. It was funny because that was the real first time, like on a big scale, that you'd planted stuff, and we were just popping them in these holes, and he was like, they were his little babies.
I was
and
literally
so
about to like throw a fit.
Yeah.
Like, I was mad.
Yeah. And then the funny thing also was they wilted, like right within 5 minutes, they were all wilted.
Gosh.
You know, because we were planting them like in the middle of the day.
Probably it was in the middle of the day. The soil was probably dry. We didn't.
And we were like, they'll be fine. We just water them. They'll be fine. But he was so like unnerved. And then like, it was
I mean, I didn't like freak out.
No, you didn't. But you wanted
inside.
To.
Yeah. I was inside. I was holding back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But
you were like, oh, they just killed all my plants.
Kind of. That's what I felt like.
Because he had self-taught himself all of this as far as production. You had...
Especially that first year.
Right.
I mean...
You had been around, you know, we had the garden shop, and then even in our little backyard, you had been starting seeds in the basement.
But
and
he's
doing
still
a garden.
All self-taught. He does not have a horticulture degree.
Yeah, no.
You have a horticulture degree. He knows more than you know.
Exactly.
Wait, seriously. Yeah. Not a put down to you. It's just...
No, he's it's that, what you use. Yes.
Yeah.
He does as far as like production and that sort of thing. And it's, to me, amazing to look back and see how far it's come since then.
But you had started. Faith. Because looking back, like...
I've always had faith.
I was like, oh, we need to clear the land. I mean, how much did it cost to do that? Wasn't that $20,000?
Yeah.
To clear the land and get it like graded. And then... we had to put in a well immediately. So before I even planted a flower, we had invested like $40,000.
It's a lot of money.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
The
setup on that scale, the infrastructure becomes expensive. But I'm still your number one supporter.
And
like, you got this.
And
you knew my work ethic.
And you do, but you do know so much about horticulture. So you could answer questions.
Yeah.
While he was teaching himself.
We were the perfect team to start a flower farm.
Yeah.
Because you do know a lot.
Yeah.
Mm. You just don't. Anytime I call and ask, you're like, oh, yeah.
Me too. He just doesn't feel like thinking about
it. I think he doesn't want to think on it. Yeah.
That's not true.
I'll be in a botanical garden somewhere, and I'm like, oh, I love this plant. And it's the one thing that's not labeled. Take a picture, take three pictures, send him, hey, can you tell me what this plant is? He's like, I don't know. Google it.
Yeah.
I'm like...
Okay, but here's the thing. When you go to get a degree in horticulture, you learn a lot more about...
corn and soybeans.
No, not even that. I don't think we learned anything about that. Because I took ornamental horticulture and floriculture. You're learning about the inside of the plant and how it works, you know, the care, the things to look for. You're not necessarily learning the identity of all the plants. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had two classes in plant identification.
Didn't you say that was one of your least favorite?
Well, by far.
Spelling counted.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how he did it.
I don't know either.
I still say you cheated on that one.
No. Oh my gosh. So the class
did you get
was,
extra credit to pass?
The class was you every day. We walked around the campus, or we would take field trips, and we literally looked at plants, and we could sample leaves. Like, we could take clippings of leaves and we'd put them in like little clear packets, or we didn't have phones like we do now, like iPhones back then. That would have been handy because you could have taken pictures. But you had to know the scientific name is what mattered.
I think I would have loved common that class. Name.
And then you had to know how to spell it all. And so then that was the class was learning plant identification. And then every week you would have a test. So it was a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So Monday, Wednesday, you walked around and looked at plants and learned it. And then on Friday, you walked around not the same pattern, but to those same plants. And you had your sheet and it's like plant number one is this. And you had to identify it. Because that's really the only plant identification as far as knowing what a plant is.
How did you remember how to spell them? Because none of them are easy.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Your young brain just pulled through.
Yeah. I knew I had to do it to get out of college, I guess.
Well, you know.
But the rest of it, other than those two, is all about plant maintenance and management and that sort of thing. Fertilizers and how that affects the plant. It's not plant identification.
Well, funny story, when I was at Clemson, you know, plants and gardening has always interested me because I grew up in the country. And I thought, oh, well, I'll take my electives in horticulture because that'd be so easy.
Right.
Oh,
they
my.
They take it serious. It's a. Yeah.
It is serious. So the first class that I took was plant, I think it was called plant biology or plant anatomy.
Plant anatomy. Yeah. There's a lot of that.
It starts out real easy. It's like leaf, stem, petal, stamen. Honey, it goes in.
It's like learning
a
body.
It's a human body.
Yeah.
It's like learning the human body. I was like, this is going to be easy. It kicked my ass. I made a C in that class because I couldn't.
Which is supposed to be your elective.
Yeah, it was should have been my A elective, but I could not dedicate the study time I needed to because for my finance classes and such.
Right.
So I was like, woo. But I didn't learn from that. I thought, well, I've made it through the worst.
Yeah.
So then I took landscape design with Dr. Mary Hawk in Clemson. And she's phenomenal and she's great and she's smart. Woo. Now that was a whole other, that was like even more technical than I realized. Mm-hmm. So all of my horticulture classes ended up, I enjoyed everything, but it ended up kicking my butt. Like nothing was easy.
Don't you feel though, if you went and did that now, because I always think that, what if I went to school for horticulture, how interested like I am in it now, how easy that would be.
It would.
Yeah, now with your working knowledge.
With the working knowledge.
Yes. Yeah. In our age. Now I could go back and get a horticulture degree at Clemson and I think I would love it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I've always said, I just know enough to be dangerous and that's really all I know.
Yeah.
I think
that's all you need to know.
Everything is on the job in every profession.
Yeah. It's all on the job. I mean, there's so much that I learned in those classes that I never used and never will need to use. I mean, the plant identification is probably the most important, but like I said, that's real world working knowledge because it also is about what plants you work with. Like the plant, my degree is from Mississippi State in Starkville, Mississippi. The plants there, although a lot of them are common here, are different than here. Mm-hmm. And very different than if I were to go up north or something. So you have to get the identification part. It's just real world working knowledge.
And I would say probably the best thing I did was take plant anatomy for our business now, because you do know how the plants work, at least in the hormones. And
well, speaking of plants working, if someone, back to my question, wants to plant some flowers for cutting this year, is it too late? What can they grow? It's not too late.
It's too late to plant stuff that would be blooming right now in the spring.
Right.
You don't want to try to do any of that. It all needs a cool period that's a lot longer than anyone's going to have left. So right now you want to be starting your summer hardy annuals. So that's going to be the stuff that loves heat.
Yeah.
You can start growing celosias, sunflowers,
I love celosia.
Marigolds. Still time to plant lisianthus. Most home gardeners aren't going to have access to that.
Yeah.
But gumfrina, basil.
Zinnias.
Yeah, zinnias could grow on a rock in the middle of Arizona, I think. And I don't think they will grow in Arizona, but
they might.
Cosmos, amaranth. There's all kinds of.
Yeah. So right now, it's not too late to plant all of your hot lovers.
And all of that stuff will take you through, if you start it from seed or if you go to a garden center and buy pre-started plants or plugs, then go in and get that in the ground now. And it's going to start blooming this summer, probably around July 4th.
Right.
And then it'll continue to bloom until fall, depending on what kind of plant it is. But you can plant zinnias now and they'll still be blooming when you have a frost.
Yeah.
Later.
And
this
the
year.
Good thing about zinnias that you can do, like we did the first year, because, you know, in production wise, you want to
succession plant.
So you constantly have fresh ones coming on. First year, we didn't have time really to do that.
No,
you
were I just didn't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first year, I planted all my seeds and planted them in the ground in April.
And was done.
And then we went on a cruise. And when we came back in July, everything was in full bloom.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, we're going to have a ton of flowers from like now all the way until frost.
Right.
And it bloomed for like a month. And then everything was done. And that was it.
Yeah.
Our first season was like a 1 month long season. And I thought it was going to be all year.
Right. Because you want to stagger your plantings. That's what the successions are. But the good thing with zinnias that we did do, that you can do that first year, have a good flush and then cut them way back and then they'll flush out again. If you're doing that at home, that's not how you want to do it for production wise, but at home you could.
That's got to be one of the hardiest flowers ever.
Yeah. It is, but it gets a lot of like fungal diseases and stuff. So they look horrible. But all you have to do is plant some now. They'll be blooming in July. A month from now, before your other ones have started blooming, plant some more.
Yeah.
And that's succession planting. And then, you know, a month later, plant some more.
Right.
And then you'll always have fresh looking zinnias. And once the other ones start to look bad and get stuff all under
the mold,
leaf,
the mildew.
The powdery mildew. Then you're done with them. Cut them down and be done with it. So you don't have to look at that. You can, and there's stuff you can spray, but it's a zinnia. Why are you going to waste the time to do that when you can just plant new seeds?
Yeah.
Like every month, you know?
And it's kind of like with sunflowers, because sunflowers are a one-time cut. They make one flower, you cut them, and they're done. And we've talked about that, I think, before, but there's a good, do you still use Pro-Cut?
Yes.
Pro-Cut.
That's a good variety to plant, because Pro-Cut is kind of the variety of sunflower. It's a single stem pollenless sunflower.
Yeah.
If you just get regular sunflower seeds, they're going to have pollen that comes out of the center. And when you cut them and bring them inside, they're going to drop pollen all over your table. But right. they have varieties that are pollenless. And for those.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They think, oh, those aren't good for the bees. They still produce nectar.
Yeah.
They just don't produce pollen. So that's still good for the bees to grow the pollenless varieties.
And the pollen, the ones that have pollen are great for people that just plant massive amounts in fields.
And if you want to eat the seeds and all that stuff, you can do black oil sunflower seeds, and you can buy a 5-pound bag of that at a Feed and Seed or Tractor Supply or something. And that's super cheap for...
Yeah.
To do a whole field of sunflowers.
But you also don't realize how much pollen comes out of that sunflower, and that you don't want dumping all over your table.
Yeah, so it depends on what your use for it is. If you want to have cut sunflowers and bring them in and have no mess, then get the pollenless. But if you just want a bunch of sunflowers, you can do like Daniel said and get the bulk ones, the black oil. But going back to succession, because those only... produce one big flower and then you cut it down and it's done. Like those you plant
every week
he starts brand new seeds and then plants them out. So it's a constant rotation of sunflowers.
And that's one reason like one sunflower stem isn't super cheap. When you go to a florist or anywhere, because
it takes the room and it...
It was one whole plant.
And sometimes at the farmer's market, the veggie farmers think that, oh, these people are making money on growing flowers. I'll grow some too. But they have no idea what they're doing. So they just will plant the wrong varieties of sunflowers, but then they'll sell them dirt cheap at the farmer's market because they don't know any different. And the seeds weren't expensive.
Right.
Whereas the Pro-Cut, they're a pricier seed because... they're like genetically whatever. They're sterile seeds. So they won't regrow if you let them go to seed. But there's other varieties too. Vincent's Choice is another good one. It's a pollenless sunflower. And then people always ask me where they can buy these seeds. So there's a few people online that sell them, like the Gardener's Workshop Farm. She sells packets of those varieties of sunflowers and other cut flowers as well. That's a great place to see like what are good cut flowers, because that's all that she sells are seeds that are great for cut flower production. And also Johnny's Seeds is a larger company that you can buy all the cut flower seeds. And that's a large company.
And you know,
the Gardener's Workshop Farm, what's good about buying from them is they have a lot of education material printed on their packets and also on their website.
And she's a great small business to support. But speaking of that, when is there going to be a Petal Pickers lineup of seeds?
We need to.
Yeah.
Need that to
add
that. Cool.
Add that to the mix.
Shipping would be great on that.
Yeah, we still got to work on the t-shirts as well.
And if you're not a sunflower person, I have never been a sunflower person.
Mm-hmm.
You must not be a happy person.
You're
not sunny and bright.
But wait. I found my favorite one that you grew, and Wesley probably got it wrong. I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? What? The burgundy? Is it called burgundy sunflower? It was like pink petals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that one is beautiful.
It's a Pro-Cut variety. And there's another one called Ruby Eclipse that's a burgundy like that.
So if you're not.
It's called Pro-Cut Plum.
Yeah.
If you're not a. I'm not a huge yellow person.
But have you seen the white ones?
Yes, those are pretty too.
Yeah,
those
are pretty too. I love the white sunflowers.
The white night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had those planted for this year, right? Mm-hmm.
But the burgundy are, and I say because the kind of the center is burgundy and the petals are like a
almost tie-dye creamy color.
Pinky. They're gorgeous.
Yeah. So sunflowers would definitely be a good starter flower if you want some cut flowers.
And they're not all yellow is my point.
Yeah. The other really cool thing that I never knew, even with my horticulture degree, about sunflowers is the size of the bloom is based on how close you plant them together. So like if you plant them closer together, they have a smaller bloom. And if you spread them apart, they will have a larger.
Why is that?
I guess they need their space.
Hormone thing.
A lot of the plants like that, we have to figure out what spacing works best per plant. Like zinnias, we can squeeze them together and plant every 6 inches apart and they'll grow straight up and it kind of makes them bloom earlier with the taller stem. Uh-huh. But the plants end up getting so big that after like 4 weeks of growing, we just have to mow it down because they get so tight.
Too lanky.
Versus if we plant them further apart, it takes longer for us to get the first flower, but over time, the plants will get a lot bigger with more flowers.
Yeah, yeah. A lot fatter and sturdier. Yeah, mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But that's the cool thing about sunflowers, though, is because, you know, if you're doing an arrangement, you don't want one necessarily the size of a salad plate. You
right.
want smaller. So it's finding that spacing on them that gives you the right size that's perfect for arrangements or bouquets versus having a big one.
But there's a farm in Easley, yeah. South Carolina, and they grow, it's not a flower farm, it's just a working farm. Mm-hmm. So they grow sunflowers.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's a field, they get huge because you're not planting them as close, you mm-hmm. know. But it doesn't matter because they're not for arrangements.
And something like that would be cool if they like go to seed and dry. Mm-hmm. You can cut it and then use that as like decor or something.
Yeah.
There's so many uses. Uh-huh. It's neat to see all the different ways. You can use the same thing, just manipulate it.
So you just got back from Italy and the Netherlands. So, and I have not been to the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? Like, what was
hold
that
on.
Like?
We got to back up to the beginning of the trip. There is so much to dive into.
Y'all are so lucky I decided to come back.
But we have to.
That's all I can say.
But we need to talk about the Netherlands, though, and the flowers. I feel like that's what we've been.
Yeah, but the flowers were better in Italy.
Really?
I thought. Well, yeah, I just like what
it was
I
saw two different
there,
legs.
It was two okay. different parts of the trip.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us about it.
Well, first of all, how bad did you miss me?
No,
you were gone almost 2 weeks.
He didn't.
I was so sleep deprived. No. One night I fell asleep on the phone with you. You thought I got killed.
Yes.
I was literally talking we to him mid-sentence and fell asleep.
Yeah, we were at market and he kept saying, hello, hello. And I said, what happened? And I said, did you lose connection? He's like, no, he's just gone.
Yeah, I was like, that's did he weird. Did he die from sleep deprivation?
Almost.
Or what happened? Like, we were literally, I've never had this happen. We were literally mid-sentence, and you said something, and then I responded, and then that was it. Like, he uh-huh. never answered again. And I was like, Daniel? Daniel?
Yeah, you finally hung up. You were like, well, I hope he's not dead, but I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah, I was like, and then I was texting like, are you being funny? Or like, what's going on? And then he like woke up the next day and was like, oh my gosh, I still had the phone right here.
So this trip came about because I was contacted in, wasn't it January, I think, one of my bulb suppliers who right. I ordered peonies and our Italian ranunculus and lilies and tulip bulbs from and daffodils. I've ordered a lot from him in the past, and he was looking for a group of American flower growers to go on this trip to help promote his business, also to highlight Italian ranunculus and some of the new products that they're releasing, such as the Moderna ranunculus. And he kind of picked some of his best customers. Also, strategically, we were located all in different regions of the United States and Canada.
Yeah.
And also, all of us kind of had a good following on Instagram or are able to translate on Instagram, like with our stories and reels and all that, because the whole reason we were going was to help promote
his business. His business and the product, the flower industry and that sort of thing.
So like most of my trip was paid for.
Right. I think that's the one thing I never said on Instagram, because I didn't know if I was like supposed to say like, oh, this company paid for Daniel to go to Italy, because everyone was like, why didn't you go? How could you let him go and you not go? And like, some people were trying to make a deal out of it. Like, it was, well, he's over there with another guy in Europe, which was another flower farmer.
And I'm like, flash, a lot of guys that grow flowers might be homosexual.
Right? Yeah. They're probably gay. Not all of them.
Yeah.
But it was funny. I didn't come out and say, look, he got a free paid trip to Europe, which is an amazing opportunity, but also it was a work trip for you to see these products and that sort of thing. So it wasn't an option for me to go, because it was a very small group.
You were not invited.
Yeah, I was not invited, but it wasn't an option because y'all were taking tours of like processing facility. Yeah.
I had to give up sleep just to call you every night,
right,
and talk to you on the phone.
Yeah.
Some nights I only got 3 hours of sleep, some four. Mm. I only got 6 hours of sleep, I think, 2 out of 11 nights.
Yeah. So it was work.
It was work, because part of the gig was that we would be posting on Instagram. Now, we were not told we had to do it every night. It could have all been after the trip or whatever, but I knew I was leaving during the busiest part of our spring. And when I came back, it would be hit the ground running. I'm still not caught up, and I've been back for 2 weeks.
Right.
So I knew I had to post at the end of every day while I was there in the moment. And I'm so glad I did.
It also made it so much more fun watching it too.
I know. It ended up being the trip of a lifetime. I thought it was going to be a really great trip, and it exceeded all expectations from day one till the end.
Yeah, you were blown away. So let's go through it. So you went to Italy first.
So yes, the trip started in Italy. There was some rumblings with other flower farmers in Canada that I'm friends with on Instagram, but I've never met in person. Yeah. They wanted to go a few days early because we kind of knew like, okay, there's going to be jet lag. And then also none of us really go over there that often. So let's go enjoy Italy and hang out. So we rented an Italian villa, Airbnb, and I really was in the dark because the Canadians are the ones that kind of planned this.
Yeah.
And so, I tagged along and I saw the Airbnb before we got there, you know, on the internet, but
it's gorgeous.
It was amazing. So we stayed in the Italian Riviera, part of the country, which is not very popular for American tourists. It's more where the Italians go to vacation for themselves,
which makes it really cool.
Yeah, I kind of love that more because I see on TikTok and Instagram, like all the hot spots in Europe, and there's like 1 million tourists there, and it looks so obnoxious, like you're at Disney World or something.
Right.
And that's not what I ever want to do on vacation. That's not fun for anybody.
It's kind of nice, though, to do what the locals do.
Exactly.
Yeah, you were like in with the locals and everything.
Our villa was up on a mountain, and there were like 3 villages around us, and like people were playing the violin. Everyone was just gardening outside. It was a very slow pace of life.
Yeah. Like,
it was amazing. The plants and everything are just out of this world, naturally growing there. So that part of the world is very temperate, I guess you would say, more mild. They don't really freeze.
So it's like the Mediterranean.
Yeah, Mediterranean
region.
So
what was it? What like was a real common thing that you would walk along that would shock me?
Everywhere had citrus. So there was lemon and lime and oranges. And then
just growing like oak trees here.
Well, I don't know if that was natural or if just everyone planted it in their yards. Everyone their gardens. Yeah. So even if you live in a condo, everyone's windows are filled with houseplants. It's so different and so nice to see.
Right.
But everyone there even just had like row crop gardens. They were, you know, growing winter crops when we were there. They had broccoli and lettuces and all that stuff growing.
Yeah.
Artichokes. I saw a lot of that. But the weeds there are like thyme and rosemary and like
how
what
heavenly
you would
is
think
it?
Of Italian spices and seasonings.
Right.
It's because it's literally growing
in
there.
Everywhere.
Like kudzu grows here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, see, that's so cool. It had to smell good too. You had to smell the fragrance. You know
maybe,
what I'm saying?
Maybe it was in the air.
Yeah. It had to be. Like if it's growing like weeds, you're walking over it.
It just smelled so fresh. But everywhere we were on our trip for the first half there in Italy was like along the Mediterranean. So we everywhere had a view. We were staying, we would visit like beach towns and some places had some really nice gardens. That we went to visit. And then while we were in Italy, the main thing there was that we were allowed to tour the facilities of Biancheri, which is the company that grows Italian ranunculus.
Right.
And that is grown worldwide. And that was in San Remo, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And San Remo used to be the flower growing capital of the entire world. So before the Netherlands had all this bulb and everything productive. Well, they probably always had tulips.
Yeah.
But there used to be other flowers that are so common in the worldwide flower trade. So like roses, carnations, all of that was grown in San Remo as well.
Yeah.
And then just over time, different world markets opened up. And
yeah.
So a lot of that production moved to greenhouses in the Netherlands or
Colombia.
Colombia, South America. And then the newest emerging flower growing market is in Kenya.
No.
Africa. Huh. Now, most of that production stays in like Europe, whereas like most of our flowers in the United States come from Colombia and Ecuador, South America.
Right.
And that's your little tour of the worldwide flower
so
market.
Interesting.
80% of the flowers consumed in the United States are grown outside of the United States. And if you're getting like roses, especially, those are coming from Ecuador and Colombia.
Right.
Those are not grown in the United States. Maybe a tiny less than 10% percentage is coming from California.
Yeah.
But ever since the marijuana production has increased in California, the flower farms are just shutting down because they can sell their facilities and stuff to these new farms and make millions of dollars.
Or hemp and marijuana.
Just for the land value.
Right.
Yeah. And
that is set up for farming.
But I think that's so crazy and why, you know, local farmers are becoming even more and more local flower farmers. It's definitely becoming more and more popular. Just look how many more there are since you started, you know, 7 years ago.
In the upstate of South Carolina, I think I was the 9th flower farmer to start and kind of register with our area. And we know everybody. And now there's 44, 7 years later.
It's crazy how it's grown, but which is a good thing. There's a market for everyone and so much of it can come back to the U.S. and still be a thing. So you were there and you got to see the ranunculus, but not only did you get to see like where they're grown, you got to see ranunculus that have not even
been released
or the greenhouse yet.
Yeah.
No one's seen outside of their production.
So we got to see their trials and it blew me.
Were they way different, their trials?
Oh, yes. There's so many different ways they can go like forward into the future. Some of the stuff I saw, I probably won't be able to order for my farm for like 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mainly because there's so many options. Some of it, they'll probably move into production. It'll take 3 to 5 years for their favorites now. But there were so much that was so different than what we have access to right now. If I'm sure there will be stuff like 10 years from now, and I'll be like, I remember seeing that on my trip.
Yeah.
So what was cool about our group too, is we were like the first group of Americans ever like given this full access to this company. It's just not a common thing. They have competitors in the Netherlands and other markets that are growing similar stuff, and they have to keep some of that at least protected. So like while we were filming and everything, every new seedling, every new plant has like numbers and what it's crossed with and all that information just out in the open for their researchers to take notes. And they're like, absolutely, you cannot post anything with these numbers.
Right.
And so we had to kind of be careful.
Right.
You know, they weren't too strict on us, but we didn't want to share that information anyways.
Right.
But there's, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And because
how big was
like,
the place?
Oh, like greenhouse after greenhouse after greenhouse after greenhouse. I don't know.
Just hundreds of thousands of square feet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Not in different parts of the city.
Right.
And then we didn't even see where they mass grow the fields, because that's actually done in Sicily, which is a whole different side of Italy than we were. We were in the northwest part, right next to France.
Yeah. So are ranunculus flowers the most number one flower from that area in Italy?
It is now. So yeah, it used to be all these other crops and ranunculus, but now basically Italian ranunculus is the last standing industry there. And ranunculus grows so well there, it's going to continue to be there.
Because it's hot and dry.
It's more mild and dry. Like they don't freeze a lot during the winter, and then it can get hot, but then once it gets hot, the ranunculus season is done.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they can't grow it year round outside, but they can. It has a long productive season there.
Yeah. And that's what he's saying. This area used to have all these other floral industry like crops, but all of them have moved except for the ranunculus.
It's in the Netherlands and other places.
So what's neat is the owner of this company, Biancheri, is actually, he's been the mayor of San Remo for the last 14 years. And I was blown away at how much interaction we had with him. So he was like on our tours, walking with us for 3 days. And we got to have lunch at his private like vineyard up on top of this mountain overlooking the Mediterranean. And what's that other city? Monaco.
Yeah.
It was just
Remember Monaco. I remember San Remo from the movie, The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Going
to San Remo.
I still haven't seen that movie yet. I know.
It's a great one. You need to watch that now.
Yeah.
I know. I should.
But isn't that crazy? You had lunch with the mayor. Like, there's another degree of separation. You know, a mayor in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is so
crazy. We broke bread together.
Yeah. You had lunch at his estate.
You said it was really cool.
The food in Italy was the best. I mean, they took us out to the nicest restaurants. Everything was so great.
But you're not a picky eater at all.
Either. No, it was a little different. So like a lot of the meat selections were a little different. And then reading on a menu, everything was in Italian. I didn't know what I was ordering. And I'm not a huge pasta person. So I did kind of lean over to like the fresh fish and that kind of stuff too. But just everything. The breads were great.
I love pasta.
I did have pasta. I did have pizza just because I had to. I was there. And I was in Italy for like a week.
Yeah.
So,
and so then the other thing is you took a pasta making class.
That was very touristy thing that we did, but that was one of the highlights.
How did yours turn out?
Oh, good. I mean, we all did it together. It was like the group of four of us. So in Italy, the first like 4 days, it was just me and my friends from Canada who are other flower growers. And we decided to do that the first day we were there. We all got there the night before, and then the first day we did this pasta making class because we'd never hung out with each other in person.
Right.
So I felt like we were friends, but like, you know, it's a little awkward. Like we're all just individual people.
Because you had messaged on Instagram.
And we're about to hang out with each other for the next 12 days.
Right.
So that was like the best thing we could
icebreaker.
Could you make pasta today if we had everything?
If you had everything and someone like gave me a recipe, I could do it. It was so simple. It's really easy.
It looks very easy when I watch it online.
But you just have to know the step-by-step process. And do I really remember? Not really.
And I'm sure that there's a technique when you're doing it.
But you said, even though this was like a tourist type thing to do because you're making pasta, wasn't it in someone's house?
Yeah.
Like just,
it was in their condo and they just had this large balcony that overlooked like the whole city. So like there was a school right down to the right and kids were having recess. To the left was the ocean. And then you're just in the middle of a city. And then the weather, of course, was perfect that day. The whole trip, except for one day, the weather was perfect.
That's amazing.
So that was a good time. If you want to go to Italy, early April.
Yeah.
It's very nice. It was still cool, but the weather was great. Insane. We just got lucky with the perfect weather in the Netherlands, too.
Yeah.
So, but there was a lot more flowers in the Netherlands.
So then you...
Variety-wise.
Yeah, there were different flowers. And so then we flew to the Netherlands. We flew into Amsterdam. And then we got to tour like the tulip fields and the daffodil fields all up there. And then there's the Keukenhof Gardens. I don't know if I said that right.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Good enough.
And... That was amazing. It's this huge gardens and it's sponsored by all the bulb companies in the area. And we saw tulips and like fritillaria and muscari and daffodils. And
now I have a question. Do they, those huge fields you see, you know, in photos, because I've never been to the Netherlands.
They mow them down.
They do and replant.
So that's what people are always like, oh my gosh, but they grow all the flowers in the Netherlands. No, they don't.
They're producing the bulb.
The Netherlands is the bulb production for the world so that they can ship out the bulbs and everyone else grows the flowers. But basically those tulip fields that you see in full bloom are blooming in April and then they let them grow. But before their whole tourism's only like 8 weeks long.
Right.
And then they come through with huge tractors and just mow all the flowers off of those plants.
Yeah.
They don't kill the plants. The plants are left green to grow the rest of the summer. But then in July, they come through and it takes them about a month to get all the tulip bulbs out of the ground. So from like early July to August, they're digging up all the tulip bulbs
and selling those.
And then it is.
So that's why the tulips are beautiful.
Yeah. And that goes back to why, like, when you see Daniel posting on Instagram and harvesting tulips. So it's the opposite here. He's growing them for the flower. So that's why he pulls them up at the right time for the flower. And the bulbs are then cut off and thrown away because you're taking all the nutrients
For
that flower from that bulb. And the bulbs are really useless. And people are always like, well, just send me the bulbs. Well, the bulbs don't have any.
It would take two. If it didn't die just from being likely malnourished.
Yeah.
It would, the first year it would grow leaves.
Right.
No bloom. And it would take all the energy from the sun in those leaves that grew that first year. If everything was perfect and it had good watering and good nutrients in the soil, then maybe it would have enough energy that the second year you would get a puny bloom.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then the third year.
In most climates in the United States, especially here in South Carolina,
It would never do good.
Mm. You might just because you got a puny flower, the next year it's going to start just going downhill because it never got the cooling requirements it really needed. The climate's just so different.
Right.
And that's not just in the South. But now if you get up into the northern part of the country, sure, you could maybe replant them and then over time. But, you know,
production-wise, you don't have the space. You're not going to replant a bulb that's not going to give you a flower. Like, yeah. It's not practical.
It doesn't make any sense for me.
And so that's the opposite. So over there, they're letting them flower. Then they cut just the flower off so that the foliage is there so the bulbs can get bigger.
But
and they're digging
up
the bulbs and selling Daniel the
when
bulbs.
When we see the pictures of the gorgeous flowers in the Netherlands, that is just for a quick moment before they chop the blooms off to
it's
feed
like
the
a
bulb.
2 weeks of the whole year, it looks like that.
Yes.
And we happen to be there like peak season,
which is crazy
because the weather can throw that off earlier or later. And it just so happened there the week we were there, like the people at the gardens that run the gardens, we met with them and they told us like of all days, like this is probably the best day of the entire season. Isn't it happened to be like 68 degrees and sunny and like they can get a lot of rain and stuff too.
Yeah.
And it was just perfect weather.
That's awesome.
And peak season.
Are tulips their number one?
Tulips and daffodils. I'm not sure numbers wise, but probably tulips.
Yeah.
And they have other industries there too.
Yeah. And so then that was your Netherlands part. And then you have one extra day at the end because of the way the tour ended, or maybe two, and you stayed in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. And you said you really liked that. Like it wasn't what you expected it to be.
I thought Amsterdam was like a rundown party city that people just go to and to smoke pot or have fun or the red light district or whatever. And I got there and was like, it is clean. It is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a little bike tour and got some touches of history on it. And, you know, the buildings there are like 700 years old.
Which is crazy.
And I don't know. And it felt young.
Yeah.
Like the people, the universities are there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of younger people there. I felt like the median age was probably 38 or something.
I want to go.
Yeah, I want to go there.
Which is healthy to see in like a, especially an old city like that.
Right.
It that felt
it's
going like
to carry on.
It's and, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, that is so cool.
And it really is a reminder of how young the U.S. is.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And that's so, what it felt like.
Yeah. You come back here and all the buildings are just new.
And just the way everything's spaced out here in the United States, it makes no sense after you go visit over there.
Right.
And
how
I'm
they've
like,
built their cities.
Oh, God, we are so greedy. But then, like, we have to think how much time we give up driving everywhere. And
right.
It just doesn't make any sense. But that's okay. I love
America. It's just
America.
Different.
Different yeah. way. Different.
It's just different.
Different way, different lifestyle. So then you made your way back to the U.S. of A. Back mm-hmm. to
I cried my way back.
I would have.
It was the best trip.
Gosh, so now you're playing catch up on the farm until after Mother's Day and beyond.
Yeah, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah.
It was hard. I mean, I was almost terrified to even agree to go
right
on that trip because that was peak ranunculus and peonies were coming on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the craziest 2 weeks of the year, and I literally left.
And it timed out just right, though.
It all worked out. I could have never taken that trip before this year.
Yeah.
You know mentally, how expensive that would have been?
And employee-wise?
Well, just mentally leaving the farm.
I know, but I'm talking, though, just paying for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, yeah. And having access to, like, yeah. You can't just go, like, oh, I want to plan a trip and then go see these facilities because they're not going to let you in. So,
no, in the Netherlands, we toured some family farms that are forcing tulips in their greenhouses. They're growing, you know, acres and acres out in the fields. We met one of the husbands. His wife owns a business called Fam Flower Farm, and they're one of, like, the most popular places, dahlia farms. In Europe.
Mm.
And so it was cool just to see, like, I've heard about her and I follow her on Instagram.
Right.
And I didn't even know we were going. And then we ended up at like their family farm that her husband runs.
Wow.
And yeah. It does tulip productions and stuff.
So cool.
And they just have so much equipment. And, you know, in the Netherlands, everything's the most efficient way possible.
Right.
They figured it out. So if you have to order a $3 million tractor that has all these gizmos or whatever, just to be the most efficient, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And then in Italy, it was all like small family farms, just like flower farming in the United States is in our farm here at Petal Pickers, where a lot of it's done with tools in your hand.
Right.
And that's what was so interesting about the trip, to see there's two totally different worlds of flower production.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Neither one of them is wrong.
Yeah. One's like, more labor intensive and
yeah. And one has more like overhead costs.
Italy's about the plant. And I mean, Netherlands is more about the plant, the bulb,
the automation involved.
Yeah. Production. And then Italy's more about the flower and
family,
yeah. The lifestyle.
The lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool.
So cool.
Well, I'm glad to have you back. I missed you the whole time.
I don't think you've ever been more jealous or missed me more in our 16 years together.
I honestly was not jealous of the trip, and I loved seeing every moment of it. And it made me very, very proud to see you doing that and, you know, being over there and traveling and getting to see it, because I knew it's like a one in a lifetime chance. But I did miss you more than ever. I think with the hour separation, like,
yeah, so,
and also, like, I know, like, I'm normally the one that leaves. I'll go to market for 7 or 10 days or whatever, and that's a good time. But I'm just in Atlanta, like, 2 hours. And I know we talk casually, like, if I'm like, oh, I'm going to check in with Daniel. And I think something about, like, knowing you were busy and, like, oh, I'll just wait on Daniel to call, you know, like.
Yeah, it's different.
It's completely different. And it was 6 hours.
And one
hours.
Night I didn't call you.
Yeah. And one night you didn't call me.
I had to go to sleep.
I was jealous.
I was literally about to like have a stroke.
I was jealous.
It was towards the end. I think I was we were doing a live sale.
And I just went to sleep earlier that night.
And then you went to sleep earlier that night. So
I was very jealous to the point where I couldn't even watch your stories. But I was very happy for you.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening and missed it, I do have all of my stories on Instagram that I did a good job of documenting the whole trip.
You did an amazing job, yeah.
And so it's saved in my highlighted stories on the Pedal Pickers Instagram page. You just click on Pedal Pickers, and then the first three bubbles are my trip. I did upload them backwards, so like start with the third bubble and then go to the second and then go to the first bubble or whatever. You'll figure it out. I separated them between Italy and the Netherlands and it was good.
Well, that's good. And one last reminder, if you need to order flowers for yourself, and don't forget, Daniel ships flowers every week, not just for Mother's Day. He ships flowers every week all across the country, whether you want to get some for yourself or send a loved one some, maybe it's a birthday. And he has a flower subscription you can sign up for as well. If you want to get flowers on the regular, that's all on the website. But now is the time to get your Mother's Day bouquet. Remember to go to pedalpickers.com.
That's right.
And grab yours. And I think this is going to wrap up this week's episode of Who's Driving. Thanks for riding along with us this week.
Thanks for sharing all that.
Definitely appreciate it. And that was also interesting. I feel like we could talk about it for like 2 hours going on and on. Remember to leave us a review wherever you're listening to your podcast. It means a lot to us and it helps us get discovered. So wherever you're listening to your podcast, leave us a review and we greatly appreciate it. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.